You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
That is the Brunettes with Moon in June Stuff. Kia ora, Gareth Shoot. How are you this morning?
Hi, Mario. Good.
It's great, yes. Great to be able to chat to you despite, you know, all the weirdness of COVID. We're reminiscing on some excellent, massive festivals, very specifically the Big Day Out. Probably some of the most far away from the present moment imagining that we could do really right now, but it's quite nice to lose ourselves in that right at this time.
Definitely.
You have written this fantastic article for Audio Culture, basically reminiscing on the Big Day Out, getting lots of great stories from people who've played it, people who were involved in the making of it, and people who just really enjoyed going as well. You played with the Brunettes at the Big Day Out. As an artist, how was that for you? It must have been a pretty singular experience.
Oh, it was great. I mean, I went to the Big Day Out all through the 90s, so I was a big fan of it already, and so to get to see how it worked behind the scenes and go up to the Immortals bar, which was the bar all the artists drank at up at the back of the stadium, stuff was nice. Though actually one of the funny things about Big Day Out with many festivals is the clashes between acts. Yeah. And when I played with the Brunettes, we were right opposite Kings of Leon.
Oh,
at the
gosh.
Top of their fame, so we stood there, and as we were setting up, we just watched streams of people leaving the field in front of us.
Oh dear. Oh well, it is festival life, isn't it? It's it's such a beloved festival, and it holds such a very specific part in the cultural history. I was just too young to make any Big Day Out, so all my experiences are through people's stories about them. We've had texts in this morning from people who said they've been to 16 Big Day Outs, gone every year, rain or shine, and you know, rain seems to be quite a big feature. Tell us a little bit about some of these stories that you have collected. What were kind of themes coming through from people telling you about the Big Day Out?
Well, it just came at a certain time. I think, you know, they'd had the sort of big, sometimes multi-day festivals sort of out of the city before that in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and some less successful than others, but the Big Day Out just came at this perfect time where indie rock was becoming really big, so the acts you could sign didn't cost too much, but what they did was having a whole heap of them, and they were kind of affordable, but that music was popular enough that it carried through. You know, the very first one in Australia was all based around Nirvana and Violent Femmes coming, you know, and that was before before Nirvana was going to break through. So it was actually Violent Femmes that were going to headline it, but by the time the show came, it was Nirvana that kind of sold it out. And then, so that was 92, and then 93 it spread through Australia, and then 94 it finally came here. And I think it was just a perfect time where there was this explosion of kind of new music, all those kind of grunge bands and Smashing Pumpkins and Hole and Rage Against the Machine and all those bands. So people really loved it, and you know, we still felt like we couldn't see, like, some of those bands couldn't afford to come here to play solo shows, so it was a lot of bands that you wouldn't see otherwise, and so it was like a regular thing on any music fan's calendar. And then again in the 2000s, I guess, with the sort of electronica breaking through to become hugely popular, and you had like Basement Jacks and Carl Cox and Prodigy and bands like that coming through. So
someone's texted in about they remember feeling the ground literally heave around when the Prodigy were playing on the main field. And we've also had a lot of people texting in about the Boiler Room and how it used to sweat from the ceiling when it was at full capacity and everyone was having a good time. It's got a specific kind of like fabulous grottiness to it and the way that people seem to remember it. And also,
yeah, I think the Boiler Room is really hard to describe. I mean, if you hadn't been there, I mean, Mount Smart Stadium was on one side and it was just a normal stadium, but then in the car park that they built this huge tent, and in early years of the Big Day Out it just had rock bands, like it had a mix of bands, but then in the 2000s with that electronica rise that I talked about, they really just focused on dance music, and so people would go in there and just dance all day long in the hot sun pumping on this tent from the outside. And so then, yeah, as you say, they were just basically cooling down through their own sweat dripping off the tent back onto them as they danced.
Oh my god.
Paid not to think about.
One of the things that has come through strong from the listeners this morning, and also comes through strong in your article, is the absolute mix of music that you'd get at the Big Day Out. It seems like you'd have, someone's just texted in about Björk playing in between She Hard and Tool, and so you had kind of like a very mix of people in a space together who wouldn't necessarily normally be fellow gig goers. Is that something that you remember well from it, Gareth?
Yeah, I mean, in the Audio Culture article I wrote, John Toogood talks about that a lot, about just how, I mean, the same way the internet's kind of made people interested in one particular kind of music be able to just find that music and not have to trawl through other stuff. You know, in those days it wasn't big enough in New Zealand to have festivals that focused on separate things, so you couldn't have a laneway that just did alternative music. Mm-hmm. So Big Day Out really did have to cover a wide range, and actually the Big Day Out in New Zealand kind of had a wider range than the Australian one, because we had such a big hip-hop scene in the 2000s. So we had a whole hip-hop stage, the Boiler Room with the dance music, and then on the main stage, yeah, like you say, there'd be Prodigy and dancing kind of bands like that, and Björk, and mixing with, you know, all the way up to Metallica, like quite full-on, very popular heavy rock bands and stuff. So yeah, it was great fun. You could come across, especially with the local band, you could easily come across some band you'd never seen before and just be like, wow, these guys are amazing, maybe I do like hip-hop or whatever. And
yeah
after all,
it seems, reading your article, one of the things that I really enjoyed about it is a lot of the New Zealand bands, the excitement of getting to be in those spaces with like people that they were really looking up to. I think Lani Perkis talks about seeing Hole, and also just Courtney Love being such a massive personality, and getting to share a lineup with bands that, you know, you idolise is a pretty big deal, especially for a country that can feel quite far away from some of those international circuits. What were some of the other kind of favourite things that you sort of discovered from people while you were writing this, Gareth?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that was the ethos of the original Australian festival. They'd kind of set it up to be where all the bands could hang out, and it was more like a summer holiday thing, that these bands came from the winter in the northern hemisphere and they'd come down and have the summer holiday and all hang out together and go to the beach and stuff. And so, yeah, you have stories in my article about like Tiki Tane going to the beach with Joe Strummer from The Clash, or
that's so cool.
You know,
such an unlikely combo.
Being picked up at the festival by Tool to come and play support for them because they just randomly came across them and stuff. But I think, especially in the 90s, it was started here by Doug Hood, who was the original sound man for like The Clean. In fact, he was the very original singer of The Clean, but then he got into recording through 4-track recording, and he recorded a lot of the early Flying Nun breakthrough EPs, and then he went into doing sound engineering, and through that he started doing big gigs, you know, like huge overseas artist shows. And so then he took, when he came into the Big Day Out here, that close association with the artist. So he did things like the first year having the 3Ds close the event and stuff, like really focusing on those New Zealand acts. So as Denise from the 3Ds covers in my article, Soundgarden were really annoyed that the 3Ds were going to close the night, so they actually like tried to play way longer and squeeze them out. So.
Oh my god! The drama.
But other times, like you say, Lani from LMNOP and before that Foamy Edge, she must have played like 9 times at Big Day Out over the years. And her band Foamy Edge were like a sort of punky sort of band, and they started out actually as a whole covers band. So to be there with Courtney Love being drunk and saying, "Oh, do you like what I'm wearing?" And she's just kind of half naked in a camisole. was just mind-blowing for her, I think. And that carried on through the early 2000s when they slowly started tightening that up a little bit, because it's got, you know, massive, like it's a 50,000 people festival, so had to tighten up that sort of thing a little bit more behind the scenes.
Some of the texts we've been getting this morning about just being in the audience are pretty special as well. Someone says they remember punters surfing on large pieces of cardboard over each other in the pouring rain while JPSE played on the main stage, which feels like a very beautiful image. We've also had a text from someone who remembers being in the BFM box and watching rockets shooting across the main field between the stage and the tower, which sounds wild. And we've also had some memories of like Tony Hawk being there with a big half pipe. It sounds like a real cultural moment for a lot of these things.
Yeah, they had all these kind of crazy amusement park rides and other sort of activities, and the weird sort of lily pad where they had sort of wacky comedy and weird musical acts and stuff. I mean, I think actually, you know, BFM was strongly associated with it at the time, and always simulcast from it and stuff, and had a box there. And Mikey Havoc not only did that as part of his role at the station, but he also filmed a TV show there. I think he played every stage there because he DJ'd in the boiler room, and he played with his band on the main stage, and then he like looked after the lily pad and stuff. And so you had that. As far as the rain, 1996 is legendary because there was just kind of a, you know, it didn't actually rain anywhere else in Auckland. That was a weird thing, but it absolutely poured. I went to that Big Day Out and everyone was just so wet and soggy. It was just such a dump of rain that even though there are these kind of wooden pallets on the floor that were meant to protect the rugby field, the mud just came up through the pallets. So people started picking up the huge wooden pieces of wood off the ground and holding them over their head to stay dry. And then, of course, yeah, people were crowd surfing and sliding through the mud. And it was fine if you were watching the main stage and you were within the crowd, it was warm. But then as soon as you, especially like at the end of the night when everyone left, everyone was just completely freezing because they dressed for this warm summer's day because it could be quite hot otherwise.
And yeah, instead you got this huge weather event. We've had so many texts about that specific one. It seems to be like a badge of honour to have made it through the 1996 Big Day Out in one piece, or mostly in one piece. Some of these stories seem to sort of show
Well, it is
otherwise.
Funny. I mean, Doug Hood said that the police actually wanted to shut them down because they thought someone would get electrocuted, and the owners thought they were going to ruin the rugby field for good, like the league field. And he just said, you know, remember the Queen Street riots in the 80s, what do? You know, down this Dee Dee Smash concert, and what happened? A massive riot. Half, you know, there's 10,000 people waiting outside to get in.
Wow.
Go out and tell them. They're probably preloaded.
Yeah.
You know, go in and tell them they're not going to come in and see what happens. They're going to, like, destroy this place.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think there's something like this could ever happen again, or is it the kind of thing that was really a time and a place and a moment in history, the Big Day Out?
Yeah, well, it's hard. I mean, the very last Big Day Out, I mean, Campbell Smith, who took over it in the 2000s, you know, he picked it up. Etienne Marius, who helped run it, stayed on, so it was a smooth kind of transition. But he actually, in the last year, he moved it to Western Springs, and it actually worked really well there. It was very beautiful and stuff. But then Campbell did try and do Auckland City Limits in a similar style with a mix of acts and stuff, and that one really didn't get the same attendance. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that was a sign that the tribes, of the musical tribes, were kind of separating to their own festivals and stuff, or whether, I don't know, costs in Auckland and so forth kind of squeezed something like that out. But I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. You know, I hope these big shows at 660 or whoever are doing, or LAB, you know, they're getting quite diverse lineups. And as they turn into more sort of all-day festivals, you know, it's good when they have like Lady Six and people like that further down the bill, or Dave Dobbin to mix it up. But yeah, as far as a festival, I'm not sure. I think, yeah, they're sort of more specialist now, I guess.
Well, Gareth, thank you so much for speaking with us this morning about the Big Day Out. I highly recommend everyone heads over to Audio Culture online and reads your article about the memories that people have shared of the Big Day Out. What an absolute cultural moment. Have a lovely rest of your day. We're going to play LCD Sound System because overwhelmingly we have had a lot of texts about people discovering this band for the first time at the Boiler Room or having very euphoric experiences. So this is Dance Yourself Clean. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Rach. Bye.
I'm loving these texts. Some of them are not appropriate to read out on the radio, but rest assured, Zoe and I are thoroughly enjoying
yes, we are.
Your stories.
BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.